Today, we'll get a crash course on why diapers matter. And maybe you're one of those fortunate families who simply goes out and buys the diapers you need. But it's a different story for your neighbors living at 200% below the federal poverty level. So during our current coronavirus emergency, we're going to learn how and why you should reach out and help the Diaper Bank of Connecticut. Then we'll turn to another generation of state residents facing significantly greater concerns in our COVID-19 world, those over age 50. We're going to check in with AARP Connecticut and learn about how that agency is responding with a robust new online resource, AARP Community Connections. And we'll hear about a few other important initiatives AARP is working on right here in the state. And we'll close replaying a recent interview with the CEO of one of our neighbors here in Milford, Boys and Girls Village. This agency serves more than 800 clients from over 50 communities, treating children and families in at-risk situations and assisting them in returning to healthy development pathways. We're going to encore our early January chat with Dr. Kimberly Shaughnessy, President and CEO, and hear about the new Boys and Girls Village Life Skills and Vocational Training Center and a brand new partnership with Housatonic and Gateway Community Colleges. We'll be back with these segments and more on the award-winning For the People with me, John Boquette, right after this reminder. In our continuing mission to showcase the creative ways our nonprofit partners are working creatively in this public health crisis, we want to remind you that each year, Ability Beyond relies on the proceeds from its Elegant Black Tie Gala to provide a hopeful future for more than 3,000 individuals with disabilities served by the nonprofit. Due to this year's unprecedented pandemic, the 2020 and Beyond Gala has been reinvented as the No Go Gala. This newly designed virtual fundraiser is going to be held Saturday, April 25th via a live stream webcast from 6 to 7 p.m. However, donations are being accepted and strongly encouraged now through the big event day. By logging on to abilitybeyond.givesmart.com, attendees can purchase a virtual ticket as well as contribute to numerous Lend a Hand levels. If you can lend a hand and help support Ability Beyond, again, just head to abilitybeyond.givesmart.com. Well, for years, virtually years and years, you've been occasionally hearing us mention the important work of the Diaper Bank of Connecticut here on the award-winning For the People. And we're pleased to be talking with their decade-long leader, Janet Stolfi Alfano, is on the line with us. Back in 2004, the Diaper Bank of Connecticut launched to centralize fundraising and distribution of diapers to poor families in Connecticut through existing service providers, including food pantries, soup kitchens, daycare centers, social service agencies, and shelters. But it's not about giving away diapers. It's about helping to support economic disadvantage. It's also important about supporting public health, and we're going to talk all about that with Janet this morning. Janet, thanks for joining us on the program.
Thank you so much for having me. Appreciate it.
So beyond the little historical sketch there, dive in a little deeper and tell us a little bit more about what makes you so passionate about leading the Diaper Bank of Connecticut and why it really is a necessary component of the larger kind of quilt of human service agencies that really take care and fill a unique niche here in Connecticut.
Sure. Thank you. So when you think about the formation of the Diaper Bank, it was really the result of a social worker, Joanne Goldblum, seeing this direct need as she visited families in New Haven. And that, you're right, it was never just about a diaper. If you think about what the consequences for a family could be, getting a visit from a social worker who is writing a note in your file saying this person doesn't have enough diapers, so she's not caring for her child adequately enough, just the impact of not having something that is an essential need could have profound impacts for a family, could be very disruptive for a family. And it was important to both provide this essential item, but also understand the implications of not having it for both the economic health and well-being of that child and of the family.
So it really is sort of offsetting a fairly significant expense for a family that has very, very young children. It it sort of creates an opening for them to be able to apply their perhaps minimal amount of funds toward things like food and medicine, right?
That's correct. And we know that for the poorest families, particularly in Connecticut, that they could be spending upwards of 11% of their income on diapers. That these are families that, you know, work at a local coffee shop or just in low wage jobs. Really, what we're seeing today as really vital jobs to individuals and to the economy overall, but they are not well paid, and they are shift workers who don't have regular schedules. And so these families are doing what they can to make ends meet, but they're paying a lot in order to just provide this essential need to their children. Mm-hmm.
So keeping in mind that we're recording this segment a little over a week before we air it on yeah. Sunday morning, the situation may have, in all likelihood, has become a little bit worse than what we might describe in the next few moments. But right. just over the past 2 weeks, as the coronavirus situation has ramped yeah. up here in Connecticut, and we've gone from yep. really almost 3 weeks since our first case to approaching 1,000 as we speak today, or perhaps just or over well over 1,000 today. Tell mm-hmm. us a little bit about what's happening on the phone lines and with the connection. Yeah. at the diaper bank.
Sure. So we are certainly hearing from individuals who are experiencing need for the first time, and we have doubled distribution, you know, what we normally do in a month, we've done in 2 weeks, and we know that we are barely keeping up with just the communications that we're receiving, both from individuals who are in need and also from all the network of community organizations that serves low-income families throughout the state of Connecticut, that they are trying to figure out how can they get families what they need in the safest way possible. And so we are in contact with state officials, federal officials, and organizations and community organizations to actually really help us get these services, these essential needed diapers to families. And that before this virus hit our state and nation and world, that in Connecticut alone, there were already about 45,000 children age 0 to 3 who experienced diaper need. And that, you know, we were, along with anyone who was actually helping out in this way, we're only hitting about 12% of that need. So we know that diaper need was already an emergency in our state that is now, you know, at the very least doubled. And we just don't even know the impact at this point because of this, the urgent situation.
And when you discuss those numbers, I guess it's really yeah. important at this point to remind people that at least based on the information I have in front of you, you're not even yeah. qualifying folks for diaper bank services unless they are at or below 200% of the federal poverty level. Is that right?
That's correct. That is correct.
So these are really the most needy.
Yes, that's right. And we know that, you know, maybe people who are making over that amount still experience diaper need, but just using that as a sort of guidepost. That 45,000 is just at or below 200%. You're exactly right. And so it is the most in need. And we do know, you know, a lot of the circumstances of those families, sort of the stories of what they are trying to do to sort of stretch their diaper budget, potentially making choices between, you know, mom eating and supplying those items. There are just horrific choices that are being made for families right now.
Right. Now, a couple of the important points to know is the average for families with one child who uses diapers is about $100 a month. So that's a nice round figure. People can really kind of get their heads around. So if they do want to make some sort of a donation or some kind of fundraising initiative or some philanthropic effort, they know that they or some community of people in their circle of influence can get together. And for $100 a month, they can take care of one family's child for diapers who calls on the diaper bank. These families are at 200% or more below the federal poverty level. But then break it down, you know, into $25 average a week, and it becomes even easier for people to get their heads around, well, you know, maybe I don't need those four or five lattes, or you know, everybody's dollar means something different. We're not diminishing that in any way, but you know, for $25 a week, you can kind of look across maybe the landscape of your economy and figure out a way that it makes sense to even maybe, you know, just for now, send that over to the Diaper Bank of Connecticut. But it's also important for people to understand some of the other implications in a non-COVID-19 world. There are some barriers to families taking advantage of other services because they may not have the necessary access to diapers for those children, right?
That's right. So what we know is that families need a supply of diapers in order for their children to attend childcare. And so not having diapers can be an impediment of actually bringing your child to childcare and attending work or school consistently. We were fortunate enough to participate in a research project on our organization that showed the economic impact, more than just the value of the diaper distributed to a family, but what was the actual economic impact of the service that we provide. And, you know, there were some of the things that we knew based on stories of families, but really it was a way for us to quantify that. And we know that, you know, most of the parents and families that we serve are working, and that we know that parents were missing work at times because they didn't have enough diapers to bring the child to childcare, and that the families were having their medical expenses reduced because they were receiving a supply of diapers from our organization. So it really it showed the impact both monetarily, but also on the health and the economic well-being of the family.
And we talked about that $100 a month, $25 a week average cost for diapers for a family for one child. So sadly, a lot of your demographic, these folks at 200% or more below the federal poverty level, are living in areas that may not have a robust access to big box grocery stores. So a lot of times they're forced to buy their diapers at bodegas, convenience stores, local shops, where the cost obviously is escalated. So the problem just escalates there. And really, the thing that's most heartbreaking to me is, you know, thinking of a baby in a diaper for a whole day because there just isn't another diaper to put that kid in, or you're trying to stretch you know, a small supply out as long as possible. That's horrible to think, but to also think that problems related to not having enough diapers could also spell you know, incidents of child abuse and domestic unrest is another factor.
Certainly, you know, there's an understanding that, and studies around, a child that is, you know, crying more is more likely to have incidents of abuse. And, you know, we really want to make sure that families are, that we are limiting their exposure to these kinds of stresses, that this is a, you know, diaper need is a problem that we can solve with support from generous donors, from changing the way in which we think about these kinds of supplies, doing a little advocacy around, you know, we were successful in eliminating the state sales tax for diapers and period supplies that went into effect in 2018. So there are a lot of ways, and simple ways, that we can act right now to actually help meet this need in our state.
Right. And for anyone out there who may be cynical enough to say, well, why don't you just put these kids in cloth diapers? Well, there's an environmental, we're not going to even get into that, but just to, you know, as a thumbnail response, there's a huge environmental impact to that. And in fact, most laundromats do not allow customers to wash cloth diapers for health and sanitary reasons. So let's just put that point to bed. In the last 3 or 4 minutes that we have with you, Janet, let's talk about how people can help. And there are two immediate ways. That is by helping underwrite with a modest donation the Diaper Bank of Connecticut's Rapid Response Fund, and they can also hold a virtual diaper drive. Break those down for us.
Sure. So we have created a Rapid Response Fund to help us really very quickly respond to exponentially growing need in our state. And we have, in fact, added some new distribution partners and increased our distributions and are really working hard to be on the road and get diapers distributed across the state of Connecticut. So that is an immediate way, and you can do that by going onto our website, www.thediaperbank.org. Right on the front page, you'll see a little Rapid Response logo, and you click on that, and it'll bring you right to the donation page. And we purchase diapers in bulk, so your donation goes farther, that we can purchase more than you would, even, you know, through Amazon or any other way to get diapers right now. So our dollar does go further. The other way, if you are, say, a business owner and your, you know, business is, you know, it's still okay and you're looking for a way to get involved that is safe for yourself and your employees, is that we are offering the opportunity for a virtual diaper drive. And that is also on our website. And it's a way that you can sort of quantify the number of diapers that you are donating, but with dollars, which is in a safe and effective way to help us out and get some friends involved that maybe they can't give a lot, but it's a way to just give a donation. Your dollar will go farther because we are purchasing those diapers in bulk.
Very good. We thank you for the information this morning, Janet. Janet Stolfi Alfano is the leader of the Diaper Bank of Connecticut. We're working with them through our radio stations to pass the word about this often unsung organization that you're hearing fulfills such a critical need. The Diaper Bank of Connecticut collects diapers and cash donations from individuals, corporations, foundations, and other sources for the bulk purchase and distribution of diapers, which are then distributed through a diaper distribution network. All of the families that benefit from your donations to the Diaper Bank of Connecticut are low income and meeting the criteria of below 200% of the federal poverty level. So every donation counts big time, and you heard why on our program this morning. Janet, thank you so much. Thediaperbank.org is their website. Easy to find. Go there and learn more how you can help this worthy organization. And Janet will be talking to you again. Thanks for joining us. Well, for a long, long time, our radio stations have been really fortunate to enjoy the partnership of AARP and the folks at AARP Serving Connecticut. This nonprofit, nonpartisan organization is working every day to empower people to choose how they live as they age. And these days, those challenges are significantly greater than they even were just a few weeks ago. We're pleased to have our good friend Nora Duncan on the program here. She is the state director for AARP Connecticut, and she's going to be on a phone line that we hope is going to serve us well. As you may have heard if you were listening last week, we're now sort of broadcasting with our N95 masks on, so you might hear a little bit of a more muffled host here today, but we're going to keep the information going. So, Nora, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me, John.
Yeah, it's also important for people to know that as we record this here on the the 2nd of April, we're not going to be broadcasting the program until, 2 Sundays from now. So there is a possibility that a couple of the things that we talk about may have kind of changed their stripes a little bit, or some advances may have been made. But the information that we're going to try to bring people this morning is mission critical, not only to AARP and AARP members across the state of Connecticut, but for all the other folks that AARP welcomes into its world with its resources and benefits. So first and foremost, I do want to thank you, Nora, and your constituents for the great work you're doing on behalf of not only my fellow AARP members, but also for all those others that you welcome to your resources. So really appreciate that. Let's start by talking about a number of the ways that AARP is serving its constituents here in Connecticut with activities. What are a few of the biggest things that are happening with the organizations right now? I imagine you, like many others, are utilizing the internet and web resources to stay in touch with your people. What's cooking on that end?
Yeah, so we have had to make a very dramatic and quick shift to virtual, like everybody else. I mean, we always had some virtual presence and a very rich website and online offerings, but now that's all of our offerings. So I'm really pleased with the ability of the organization to pivot and to address the existing and current and ever-changing, world we're living in with coronavirus and COVID-19. So one of the great things that we've been able to do is to start AARP communityconnections.org. That's AARP communityconnections.org. This is a really interesting site that does a couple of things. It allows people to search out in their local community what are called mutual aid groups. So maybe there's a group that needs to form in a community around helping deliver groceries to people who are vulnerable to the virus, because as we know, the home delivery options are really overwhelmed. This is where you could go and find a mutual aid group like that, or start a mutual aid group like that. Maybe it's, people have the coronavirus, they need their dog walked. I mean, it could be anything. But this is a way for people to connect in their own communities, either to start a group or to join a group. So the other things also, though, that we have here that I think are really interesting and really important have to do with sort of the emotional issues that are going on with the virus and the social distancing, because social distancing for many can mean social isolation. And social isolation is really like a public health issue unto itself. So you can request a phone call from a friendly AARP volunteer and actually speak to someone on the phone, or you can find someone to speak with or find tools, chat groups, if you're experiencing emotional anxiety or distress. And then there are also options that we have curated to help people coordinate help for a family member or a friend. If you can't do the things you were doing in person before, how do you build your virtual team to help coordinate that kind of care? And so then there's also some interesting discussions and guidance, links right to the CDC, other options for caregivers to really dig in and find things that help for them. So, I mean, these resources are there. They're free to anyone to use. And we were able to get this up and running in the first about, 7 to 10 days of the virus really starting to hit hard. And again, it's AARPcommunityconnections.org. And again, free, open to everyone.
Great. So let's break down just a few of the real key aspects of the Community Connections Initiative, because I really, when you look at a horrible situation giving birth to a positive initiative, if Community Connections survives post COVID-19, it looks like it's got some really amazing infrastructure and components that could really make a huge difference, not just here in Connecticut, but around the country. So you did mention that folks can get a call from an AARP volunteer or a trained counselor. At what point would a caller into AARP kind of be, transitioned to a more professional person on the other end of the line? What are you hearing from Connecticut constituents that are calling, and how do you sort of qualify whether or not they just need to have a friendly voice on the other end of the line, or when they are feeling that they may need more professional intervention?
Yeah, so this has come up in conversations with my colleagues around the country. I haven't heard anything specifically about a call going from friendly to really a distress or a crisis call at this point in time. But we have the volunteers who are answering those calls trained to, they're not professionals at this point who can give that kind of crisis advice, but they have the resources at hand to help hand off to the next level of care, so to speak. Mm-hmm. So, there are options and opportunities in every state to connect for crisis intervention. And so those volunteers will be getting that kind of information and being able to pass it along and help even facilitate that connection. What we're not doing is giving the professional advice, because what we're running off of is volunteers who are really there as a friendly voice in challenging times to try to direct people to the best resources can.
Well, what I was trying to get at was the rollover factor or the connections factor. And it looks like you guys have it from the bottom up and the top down, so that if somebody suddenly alludes to the fact that they're not sure if they've taken too much of their medication, or there's a suggestion of feeling suicidal or highly depressed, that you can immediately help in most cases to facilitate some sort of connection with the next level of intervention, while hopefully kind of keeping them on the line.
Yeah, that's my understanding, and like I said, I don't think it's actually happened yet, but we certainly all, when this got announced, wanted to know that kind of information, because I knew it would be a question that's going to be asked.
Yep.
And, when I think around here in Connecticut, let's take out the AARP friendly caller and talk about the resources that we have here in Connecticut. I mean, the first option, if someone's not in immediate crisis, but really thinks they need to find more help, is 211. They'll get you to wherever you need to be.
Right.
They may have a little bit.
I was going to say 911 is emergent. 211 is the next non-emergent level.
Yeah. Information about the services and the resources in our state that can help people connect with what they need locally is 211. So that's a really great place to go for anybody if they have questions. I mean, even if you're wondering if you should, seek a coronavirus test. I mean, they're doing that, as well as their additional information, like how to connect with maybe low-income household needs. Maybe you've lost your job, you've never been in this situation before, you're waiting on the unemployment to come in, and you need a little help to get through. They're the ones to go to. And then it's also, if it's your mom you're worried about, call and ask about what services there might be in her community. Even if you're not around the corner. So they're really good for that, too, just so people know that that's out there.
Great. We've got a lot more to talk about, not just about community connections, but also virtual weekly telephone town halls that are going to provide people with a lot of up to the minute resources and information about the pandemic. We're going to also talk a little bit about advocacy and the hope of AARP and its members to make some adjustments so to facilitate voting in the upcoming primary. So we're going to come back after a very brief break. Stick with us, please, as we return with Nora Duncan from AARP Connecticut. Do you love Connecticut? If you do, there are hundreds of nonprofit agencies, community groups, and grassroots organizations that would love to have your support. You can learn about many of them through Love CT. Just go to our radio station website, hit the event guide tab, and click on to Love CT to help the many causes supported by Connoisseur Media. I'm John Voquette, your public affairs director here at Connoisseur Media. We'll be back to the award-winning For the People right after this news. The Alzheimer's Association Connecticut chapter is offering education programs and support groups online amid the COVID-19 outbreak as the association continues to pursue its mission. These no-cost programs feature information on topics including the warning signs of Alzheimer's disease, communication strategies, living with Alzheimer's, and caregiving techniques. Information and registration for all online programs can be found at communityresourcefinder.org. We're back. Thanks for hanging out. Glad the subject matter is interesting to you. It is certainly critically important, as you may have been hearing in the first half of our discussion with Nora Duncan from AARP Connecticut. If you're interested, they have recently launched their AARP Community Connections platform to find help or give it during the coronavirus pandemic. We are talking about how they are putting volunteers to work to be a kind of a frontline friendly voices for people that call, but Community Connections also has a window to help folks create something called a Savo or Savo account. Is that right, Nora?
Yeah, I think it's called Savo, but it might be Savo. You know, I've never actually had to pronounce it out loud.
It's savvy. It's savvy no matter what.
Yeah, S-A-V-O. I can tell you it's that.
What's that about?
And that is a way that it's a platform that brings friends and families together to support a loved one. And so it's really a link to another digital platform that you can use on your iPhone, et cetera. They'll ask a series of questions to better understand your loved one's needs. And based on those answers, they'll generate customized tasks that are tailored to each family. So it may be anything from pet care to household chores to emotional support to monitoring of medications. It has calendars, and it has a way to invite your other loved ones to take part. So maybe it's, I'm just going to say, I'm an only child, but let's pretend it's my boyfriend and him and his two brothers are going to create a trio to care for their parents and deal with the tasks at hand. This is a tool, a device, a digital platform by which to do that and stay organized.
Great. And let's just quickly remind people that if they're feeling like they want to be part of a supportive online community for people facing health challenges, they can become one of the Mighty. What's the Mighty?
The Mighty is, now I see I'm working like you are, clicking back and forth, right?
Oh, yeah.
The Mighty is an online community discussion platform. So AARP has taken other groups and other platforms and brought them together in one place. And these are the things that we think are the most helpful. This is an opportunity to join virtual events.
I see.
Everything from coping with chronic pain during a pandemic to a ukulele class.
Okay.
I mean, you know, so it's from the entertainment to the real life struggles that people are facing. And so I'm looking at the Mighty right now. They have almost 10,000 people following them and 32,000 likes. But it's, it's health topics, it's connection, it's community. And the health topics actually draw down on some of the most prevalent health issues in our communities, autism, cancer, you know, disabilities, mental health, rare disease. There are all sorts of topics, and it will relate to how we cope in a pandemic with these topics.
Great. Well, let's,
and these diseases.
Yeah, let's switch gears to another important thing, and that is the preservation of our American political system and our Connecticut political system. One of the things that AARP Connecticut is working really hard on is to try to find a way to effectively conduct the primary voting here in the state in a couple of months. Nora, what do we need to know about that?
Well, the primary has been moved to June 2nd, which is, you know, that's already done. So we have on April 1st sent a letter to the governor asking that by executive order, He focused on the ability to for everyone to continue to access voting during the primary while ensuring health protections. I mean, so age 65 and up is the largest voting bloc in America. They're also the most at risk for COVID-19. And we need to ensure that this disease does not interrupt our democracy. So we're asking for everyone to be able to do no excuse mail-in ballots. Connecticut has a really strict and frankly antiquated voting system as compared to most of the rest of the country. So that, in addition, we want full transparency of any new guidelines, dates, and measures that are going to go into the 2020 primary. We want to increase the absentee voting in light of local, state, and federal government recommendations on social distancing. We want to deal with considerations of the emergency measures that would allow more residents to vote by mail. Like I said, the absentee ballots. We got to really think about long-term care centers, medical facilities, those who are quarantined, nursing home patients that are being moved around because of COVID-19. And we need to be able to promptly mail all Connecticut voters clear communication about any new voter guidelines once they're determined. We have a little bit of time, but acting now is critically important. And the Secretary of State is on the same page, so I know she's ready to move on this.
Great. In the last three minutes or so that we have with you, Nora, there is also a way for folks to get the latest, best information and speak with authorities or hear from authorities, I should say, about what's happening with this global pandemic right in their own country, in their own states. And that is the weekly telephone town hall. How does that work?
Every single Thursday from now until hopefully not much longer, but we don't know. Every Thursday at 1 p.m., there is a toll-free telephone town hall taking place with different experts, ranging from fraud to financial to specificity of the latest developments in health on the coronavirus. Anyone can join that, and you can listen to all of the past recordings as well. AARP.org/coronavirus, and the toll-free number is 855-274-9507. But the latest and greatest is always at AARP.org/coronavirus. That is going to get you to all the things that we're working on about, you know, stimulus checks, the federal government packages, et cetera. So that's going to be the good national resource as well as access to those previous recordings.
Great. And in the last couple minutes that we have with you, tell us just a couple of the other ways that AARP in Connecticut is working to advocate, not just for its members, but for the entire demographic it serves.
Yeah, so we're really trying hard to make sure that people have access to the most recent information. We were able to host the governor, the state long-term care ombudsman, the state epidemiologist on a telephone town hall. We have two more telephone town halls coming up. I can tell you on April 14th, we'll be hosting both of our U.S. senators to get the latest from them. And then there's more to come after that. We stream that on Facebook. Anybody can listen. We have a toll-free number that we'll be placing up there on how to call in yourself. So these are, you know, important people that we can bring to our members and non-members directly so that they can get the most recent information. And then, you know, we're going to be moving some of our regular programming to a virtual platform, important things like fraud prevention, job seeking, and the like. And then, you know, I just want to toss in there for the last minute that we're also, you know, there's 22,000 nursing home residents in Connecticut and a lot of people that love them. And we are really working hard to try to get the governor and the public health commissioner to modify some executive orders and public health orders to not only, listen, we know people can't go into nursing home facilities, but we need to be able to communicate and visit virtually with the people in nursing homes. Many good nursing homes are facilitating this. Some are not. And I'm also very concerned about patient resident safety. And we are looking to have some video monitoring executive orders and public health orders passed. It's such a critical issue, especially when the state is going to be moving people to COVID positive and COVID negative nursing homes. Yep. A nursing home is your home. And being moved around without your quote unquote consent, and without your family being able to really keep track of you and stay in communication is a recipe for more trouble than we need. And I'm really hoping that the government acts sooner than later on these temporary measures and that the General Assembly comes back and acts permanently later.
Right. And once again, bearing in mind for folks that may not have been in at the beginning of the segment, you know, we are recording this approximately 9 or 10 days before it's broadcast. So some of the subject matter on the program may have already been done or acted upon, but we're trying to keep it as fresh as possible, given all the challenges that are being faced, many of which you're hearing about today with Nora Duncan, who's State Director of AARP Connecticut. AARP is the nation's largest nonprofit, nonpartisan organization dedicated to empowering people age 50 and older to choose how they live. And as they age, they strengthen communities and advocate, as you hear, for what matters most to families. General information and to find the Connecticut chapter, you can go to aarp.org. But also remember this robust new platform, which you can consult at any time, aarpcommunityconnections.org. Nora, be well, and we will be talking to you again soon. Thanks for all the great work AARP is doing at this point. Well, like the leaders before her, we're so pleased to have Dr. Kim Shaughnessy in the studio with us. She has just recently been elevated to the position of president and CEO of Boys and Girls Village. Folks who may not be familiar with the headquarters to the award-winning For the People will be happy to know if they ever cross the Sikorsky Bridge between Stratford and Milford. Going north, they're basically not just going by in close proximity to where we do our broadcasting, but much closer in proximity to what was a long ago Boys Village and is now Boys and Girls Village for quite some time. Founded in 1942 and going strong today with an incredible staff of in excess of 300 employees and sponsoring 15 programs that benefit close to 800 clients per year from across 50 communities here in Connecticut. We're going to tell you a lot more about it with Dr. Shaughnessy. Kim, welcome to the program. Thanks for joining us here in studio. Great to have our neighbor come down and visit, and we're glad to be able to continue to remind people of the critically important work you're doing there. But before we talk about Boys and Girls Village, just give us a quick background on yourself. You've had a lot of roles at Boys and Girls Village and a lot of experience in this line of work, so to speak.
Yes, thank you very much. I have. I started at Boys and Girls Village about 14 years ago, a little over 14 years, and I started as a director back in that time. Before that time, I worked at Bridgeport Hospital in one of their adolescent and child community-based programs. And while that work, doing that direct service work, was a lot of fun, very invigorating, and you need a lot of energy to work with these kids, I felt when I had the opportunity that I could do even more as a director. I thought it could be even making more of a difference, setting policy and developing new programs. And it has been so gratifying to be part of growing the agency, and my role has expanded and grown as well over the years, taking over more responsibilities. I am proud to say that I believe I've enhanced the agency and its services, and in July 2018, I was named president as part of our succession planning and took over as CEO on January 1st of this year.
What I find is great about people like you, because a lot of times in organizations like these, the boards or those who do the recruiting may be attracted to various things. But I think the most successful leaders are the ones that were on the front lines doing the work in the trenches before they took over organizations where they oversaw many others. So you could say, hey, you know, I own the restaurant now, but I washed the dishes, I took out the garbage and such and such. And that's really sort of what you did at Bridgeport Hospital.
Yeah, absolutely. We would run groups for the children. And so in running these groups, you'd have to pay close attention to the nuances of what they were not only saying, but what their behaviors were conveying to you. So you always had to be animated and alert, and you had to be thinking constantly on your feet. So a lot of people don't like that kind of work. It's hard to find those of us that do, but it's so gratifying. And yes, I can certainly relate to what my staff is going through and the issues that face them and taking care of these challenging young people.
Mm, yeah. Well, I remember working in Milford like 30 plus years ago, and I always used to come up from the valley and drive up Wheeler's Farms Road. And there was this rustic camp looking environment off to one side of the road there, which at that point was Boys Village. Mm-hmm. And you'd go on the parkway and you'd go by the sign and blink and it was gone. Today, a Boys and Girls Village, and particularly under your leadership and under your work in partnership with your many other constituents there and folks, has turned into quite an incredible it's a great asset, really, not just for the community in the region, but for the entire state of Connecticut. Tell us a little bit about the growth of Boys Village, not going back to 1942 necessarily, which is when it all got started, but really what has become not the Boys Village, but the Boys and Girls Village of 2020.
Sure. We have currently over 300 employees and over 15 programs. We've had unprecedented growth in the past 5 to 6 years where the agency has really doubled in size. So we've had a lot of success in the most recent past. We treat children and families in at-risk situations and assist them in finding healthy developmental pathways. Now, many of our programs are statewide. We have physical locations in Milford, Bridgeport, and Norwalk. We also recently purchased a site in Waterbury in order to make our services more accessible to the northern part of the state. You can cut our programs into four divisions, really, a behavioral health division, special education, permanency planning, and most recently, we've been working with the juvenile justice system. Our school, our therapeutic day school, when I started here 14 years ago, it only went through the eighth grade. It now is a fully, goes all the way from kindergarten to the 12th grade. And additionally, we now are having a life skills and vocational training center is under construction and hopefully will be open in September before the new school year starts.
So in terms of all of the activities there, we want to drill into a couple of them that are pretty new and exciting, starting with this Life Skills and Vocational Training Center. Tell us a little bit about the impetus behind that. I mean, even going back to Boys Village days, it was always about kind of imparting life skills, but mm-hmm. now you've basically kind of taken both the movement and the science and combine that in a facility that really brings it all to provide the best service.
Right. What we found is we have begun to reach out to older youth, and back in the day, it was really younger kids that we were seeing a lot of, but the most underserved population really are these adolescents and older kids who are entering adulthood. Mm-hmm. And while we're treating their psychiatric symptoms or their emotional issues or their past histories of trauma, what we found is that if they still don't have real world life skills, being able to manage their money, financial literacy, job skills, they're still not going to be able to have a productive and successful life. So that's why we thought this vocational training center was perfect to put on our Milford campus and to assist these kids in developing those skills that will help them to be successful.
And even though you're combining kind of the history and the movement and the facility, a program like this doesn't really hit home and make a difference and kind of grab the students' interest unless they're talking or interacting with peers. So with that in mind, you formed a great partnership with one of the local colleges, right?
We have entered into a collaboration with Housatonic and Gateway Community Colleges, which is going to allow our students to both receive credit-worthy instruction at our Life Skills and Vocational Training Center, as well as having the opportunity to receive course credits and to begin to help them seamlessly make the jump to higher education and the rich array of certificate programs offered by these colleges. And we are continuing to look for more and more partners to work with in regards to this.
Well, can you talk a little bit briefly about how the partnership came together? I mean, did you guys go and kind of cast the net toward the college, or did you learn that the college was looking for opportunities?
No, we reached out to them, and we were able to set up tours of their campuses and meetings, and they came to visit our campus. And so we've had talks and discussions with various people. One of the biggest components is the culinary. We already have a big culinary vocational piece on our own campus, but we've also talked with them about perhaps getting some of their instructors to come to our new Life Skills Training Center and teach our kids, as well as we'll be able to give them certificate programs already that we already are able to do, but now they'll actually earn the credit for it. Mm. So some kids will be able to leave school already having credits towards an associate's degree. So we reached out to them very, very much because we knew this was going to be a very optimal partnership.
And as private industries and universities and colleges in Connecticut and educational programs, even high schools and middle schools, are partnering to try to make sure they're providing the greatest opportunity for career success for young people, so too is Boys and Girls Village, not just interested in getting more educational partners, but industry partners.
Yes. And actually, this is where I would love to reach out to your listeners. Sure. When we would love for them to volunteer. If you run a business, we would like you to come and tell your kids about your professions. It doesn't have to be a month-long commitment. Even a one-off time would be great. Tell the kids about dog grooming. Tell them if you're a florist or if you work at a radio station. we would love you to come volunteer your time and let our kids know about what it takes to go into those different professions, because the kids have a lot of varied wide interest. And so while we look to find placements for them, as well, it'd be great just to have people come and give informational sessions.
Yeah. Are there other volunteer opportunities? Obviously, folks can maybe consider being a member of a board, but do you have some sort of a foundation or support organization that that's tied that helps with fundraising or targeted capital projects?
For in these kind of things, we do have a whole program for volunteers. So if you want to go to our website, which is www.bgvillage.org, or call us at 203-877-0300, just let us know that you're interested in volunteering or being a part of the organization, and we will connect you to the correct people to move this forward.
Do you also have any opportunity for the public to kind of come to this new facility and not just see how awesome it is, but to learn about various ways that they can help, whether it's by writing a check for a donation or getting involved as a mentor or something like that?
We just recently had a groundbreaking event for it, and we got wonderful publicity for it. But also, as we continue to construct it, we will have open houses and invite, you know, our neighbors and the public to come. And again, anybody who wants to partner with us, you know, please just give us a call or check out our website.
Excellent. Also, in terms of folks getting in touch, hit them again with the website.
It's www.bgvillage.org or 203-877-0300. And we thank people very much for being so supportive of our agency over these last 70 plus years.
Fantastic. Boys and Girls Village, founded in 1942 as part of the first national First Offenders movement. And since then, it has become Boys and Girls Village and evolved into an agency serving more than 800 clients from across 50 communities, treating children and families at risk in at-risk situations and assisting them in returning to healthy developmental pathways. Find out more, learn how to help, bgvillage.org, or call 877-0300. That's 203-877-0300. Our guest this morning in studio is Dr. Kim Shaughnessy. She is CEO and president of Boys and Girls Village. Kim, great to see you. We're going to have you back again soon, and maybe we'll even come over and visit you at Boys and Girls Village. Thanks.
Wonderful. You're welcome anytime.
You've been listening to our award-winning public affairs program, For the People. The opinions expressed on this broadcast represent those of our guests and host. If you have a suggestion for an issue, a guest, or a PSA relevant to the audience and community served by our radio station, you must make a request for consideration in writing to me via email at john.voquette@connoisseurct.com. We do not accept pitches or requests for coverage by phone. Remember, no part of this program may be copied, disseminated, or rebroadcast. Our public file detailing the many critical community and state issues addressed on For the People can be reviewed upon request during normal business hours at 440 Wheeler's Farms Road in Milford or on our station website. Our theme music is by Rick Miller and Scott's, with original music by Noel Viette. I'm Director of Public Affairs, John Voquette. Join us again this time next week for more conversation and information on the award-winning For the People. And don't forget, you can listen to this and other For the People podcasts anytime on iTunes or under the podcast tab on our station's website. Until this time next week, thanks for listening.